let's get right to it. The story is an enormous one, and it is breaking over and over again throughout the day. We try to stay on top of it and bring you the latest, the most important of the stories that we come across. And Dr. Henry Nyman is back tonight. He'll be here again tomorrow night and every night at this time for as long as necessary. We're very honored to have him. We've been colleagues for a long, long time. And I think if you've heard the program before, you know the quality of information you get here is second to none. Welcome back, Henry. Let's get to it.
Okay, Jeff. Well, part of the story is kind of the same story, just the numbers get bigger. The number of cases that are PCR confirmed is now up to 15,213. And the number confirmed is up to 5,974. And the suspect is approaching 10,000. It's at 9,239. And that suspect number is really the ones that are PCR confirmed, but the national lab has not been able to do the second test on them. And the reason that number is going up is because there are more cases than the national lab can do. And they can't keep up, so it keeps getting bigger and bigger on the confirmed side. And what that
What do you have, by way of statistics, the key part, what do you have as the latest number of people who have been recovered and released by the hospital that have been taking care of them? How many resolved cases in that respect?
The latest number is four. This is just for China, but it's not that different elsewhere. It's 132 deaths and 103 discharges. So the deaths are still higher than the discharges. And,
very good.
Yeah, it's above 50% case fatality rate based upon the outcomes. Mm-hmm. And then there are another 1,239 severe cases. So the deaths aren't going to go down. The deaths are going up 20
severe
or 30
cases,
a day.
Is that considered grave? These people are on ECMO and other very serious instrumentation.
It's hard to say exactly how they divide them up. You know, they're evaluated across the country, so you know different doctors are putting different classifications on them, and these are all in Chinese, so they're translated, and you know that's how it comes. Is that's the category they have for the national one. Usually for the local ones, they'll divide it up into a severe and critical, and sometimes they'll both be listed as critical, so it'll say critical and critical. So, you know, exactly how they divide them up, I think they merge some of these. I think the severe is probably severe and critical together, and exactly what percentage of the total falls into those two categories.
It's important to remember, and one more thing, and I'll step back. This is not a virus that people get and shake in a few days or a week or two. This is a virus with a 50% mortality rate plus right now. This is a very bad disease to have, and there's really not a whole lot people can expect. If they go into a hospital, stay hydrated. There's no real treatment for this. And you either make it or you don't. In China, many of the hospitals are telling local area residents, if you're sick, go home, take care of yourselves. That's the best thing you can do. They don't want them to come to the hospital. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, they don't have room.
No, they're full.
Part of the problem is going to be, that, I mean, they're building new hospitals, and I think one's almost done. I think they've started on three more. But then they have to staff them, and then they need to have the machine. So, you know, a lot of these patients
equipment
end up on ventilators or ECMO machines. ECMO machines are are very expensive, but you not only need the machine, you need to have a trained technician. So even if you bought the machines, you still would have to do the training, because the new machine doesn't come with a technician. You have to, you know, the technician has to be trained, and they're a complex system, and they have to know what they're doing to you know, make it useful. And so that's one of the issues, is that as the numbers go up, it's going to be increasingly difficult to have a large number of severe cases that require a long hospitalization. I mean, when they go on ECMO machines, they're frequently on them for a long time, and I don't know if they're triaging them, and you know, older patients aren't going on ECMO machines because they don't have enough, and so that's just pure speculation. I really don't know exactly how many they have.
Right.
I was surprised though with some of the flu outbreaks that you know, the numbers seemed low. The number that they had in a given, you know, metropolitan area, you know, it was, you know, 10, 20 machines or something. And and they would get situations where, you know, they were all in use. So that that's one of the things the hospital can offer, is that, you know, if they've got pneumonia and they've got so much fluid on their lungs and they can't breathe, that they can oxygenate the blood for them. But they have X number of machines and technicians to actually use those. So it's a lot easier said than done in some of these cases where it's overloaded. But in any event, the numbers are still very high, and they go up every day. And the media still doesn't quite get the fact that these suspect cases are going up. So they just look at the confirmed. And, you know, those are going up. But, you know, there's a big difference between having 6,000 cases and having 15,000 cases, and they really have 15,000. And so that would affect some of the calculations on exactly how transmissible the virus is.
Yep.
That they don't realize how many cases there are, even if they're trying to do something well controlled by just looking at you know, PCR confirmed, that they can use that to look at other outbreaks like SARS, and they can use it for other diseases and get some type of baseline that, you know, this is how many people are going in the hospital because of this virus. And you know, if they think there's only 6,000 and there's really 15,000, especially over such a short time period, that would affect the calculations. So the virus would be more transmissible than they realize, because those confirmed cases, I'm sorry, suspect cases are not like the ones at the border where, you know, three quarters of them will end up being negative. In this case, virtually all of the suspect cases will be positive because they've already been PCR positive once. So anyway, the numbers are still going up, and there's speculation that the reason they're going up so dramatically is there must be a second mutation. And I was going to spend a little bit of time on the mutation front, because in part because the CDC has now sequenced all five of the U.S. cases, and they deposited the three of them today. They had deposited two of them previously. So they did the two in California, one in Orange County and one in L.A. County, and they did the one in Arizona. Actually, it's in Phoenix because the sheets come out. I mean, it's there with Maricopa County, but it's the characterization sheets gives the age and the gender and the location most of the time. And and actually, these cases are a little bit on the younger side. They're in their 30s, but they the one in Illinois is in Chicago, and the one in Maricopa County is in Phoenix, and the one in LA County is in LA. And anyway, all of those sequences came out, and I didn't put up as many stories as usual because I was wading through the sequences. But the reason I was interested in the sequences, I touched on this previously, was that there was two mutations that were in the Shenzhen cluster that were also in the first two sequences out of the United States, the one in Washington and the one in Chicago. And they certainly caught my eye because it was the Shenzhen cluster had been written up in Lancet last week, and it had been written up in the Daily Update a few days before that, and the sequences had been deposited, and they said it was a cluster in Shenzhen. So when the sequences first came out, neither of the other two were out, so it wasn't really clear who these people were, but they did give the age and gender. They were all in their 60s, between 63 and 65, I think, and I think it was two female and one male. And they were identical sequences. And I was particularly interested in this mutation that was in the ORF8 gene. And they all had the ORF8 gene. And both of the U.S. cases had that. And what was of interest and of concern was whether this was representing a lineage that was emerging. And that's kind of what is concerning and what you're kind of looking for. And that's in part because of the parallel with the SARS outbreak. With the SARS outbreak, initially, the virus wasn't that lethal and it wasn't that transmissible. And I've mentioned this before, but it's worth repeating because what's being posted on the internet is all over the place. But at this time, I mean, there's some they're trying to say that SARS was more serious than the current outbreak, and I don't even know where the numbers are coming from. But anyway, the real numbers are that at this point in 2003, when the SARS outbreak began in November and had been going for about 3 months, there were 300 cases and there were 5 deaths. And so it started relatively slowly. That's only 100 cases a month. So it's, you know, on average of 3 cases a day, and it's 5 deaths over a 3 month period. So, it didn't have
that really
high
no comparison. No.
Right.
No.
Right. And then this issue with the Metropole Hotels happened, and this was ORF8 ended up with a 29 nucleotide deletion, and that particular virus was much more lethal and much more transmissible. And because the physician brought that to the hotel and infected several travelers, that particular version got spread internationally, and it went to Toronto and Hanoi and Singapore and Hong Kong. And there were major outbreaks in those cities from those particular people. I mean, they knew exactly who all these people were. The one that went to Toronto was a 78-year-old female. The one that went to Hanoi was a businessman in his 30s or so. Singapore were three sisters. And the one that went to Hong Kong was a visitor to the hotel. And what happened with several of them what happened with all of them was well covered in the media. The Hanoi outbreak wasn't nearly as bad. The three sisters got things going in Singapore, and you know, a lot of healthcare workers were infected. And the patient in Hong Kong had this nebulizer that put the virus all over the place and infected a bunch of interns on rounds that came to visit him, and then the one in Toronto, she died at home, but she affected her son, and he basically spread it all over the hospital there in Toronto. So, you know, exactly what happened with the super spreaders in each of those cities was well known, and all of those viruses were sequenced, many versions in most places, and they all had the same 29 nucleotide deletion, and they were all very closely related with a little bit of wiggle. It appeared that, you know, the physician had been affected with several versions, but they all had the 29 nucleotide deletion, but there were other changes, those bounced around with the patients that were the guests that were in the Metropole Hotel, and then subsequently in these in the hospitals in these different cities. So the concern was that the same thing could be happening here and today in COVID, the novel, they still don't have a name for it. It's a 2019 novel coronavirus, essentially.
Right. So, well, I've got a name for it. SARS 2.0.
They're not probably going to do that because it's close, but it's not close enough that they're going to call it SARS. But
well, different. A 2.0 is not a clone of the original. An advanced copy. It's a new version. So, anyway.
Well, they're not going to like that name because they're. I mean, there was another teleconference today, and this was with NIH, and and the reporters were getting a little bit more aggressive, and NIH was getting a little bit more defensive. So,
give me an example. Can you remember one example of an aggressive journalist with this? What do you mean?
Oh, they said, well, you guys pulled all your personnel out of your embassy, and others have said that was an overreaction. You know, nobody else is pulling their personnel out. And then they came back and said, well, we're going to do what's best for our personnel, and we're going to make those decisions. Da, 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 da. So it was a little contentious on that. They're asking about sharing the virus, and do you have isolates, and are you going to give those to other researchers? And CDC said, well, we're working on growing it, and we have to get it growing before we can do that. And then same thing, sharing the assay, and that they're distributing to the labs in the U.S. first, and then they're going to give it out internationally, but it's a brand new test, and they want to make sure it's good before they give it out. So it's that type of thing. It's a little unusual to get that many things in one presser. The NIH was trying to, play things down as, you know, it's a virus and there's some deaths, and the deaths are in the most severe cases and they're not all severe.
That's embarrassing even to hear. But they want to just tell it straight.
Actually, what's even more embarrassing, and this was, I guess we can go right to this. There's a kind of another group. I shouldn't name the group. Anyway, there's a group in Europe that makes predictions, and they kind of always go on the low side as to how risky things are. And they had said that, there's a risk in China, but, you know, it's the risk that is going to come to Europe low, you know, low to moderate. It's much higher in China. It's a much bigger problem. And maybe there's a problem in Southeast Asia, but Europe, don't worry about it. It turns out that Europe may be the first example of, well, it's definitely, I think, the best example of onward transmission. and may actually be the first super spreader. And it's in Germany. So, and I don't know if you've seen the story, but this was bad news on almost any aspect. And it was a worker at, I don't remember what kind of, facility it was, but I think they've got something like 40 something employees. And, she had been, in China, and I think in Wuhan, and had come back to Germany and was in some type of meeting, and she had no symptoms. And then she went back to China, and one of the people at the meeting ended up getting the virus. And then that person infected three other people in the company. And there's now 30 other people in the company that are being tested tomorrow, that all were in the
What kind of company is this, and what are we talking about?
I'm trying to remember what it is. I'll look it up I don't think it was medical. I think it was like a manufacturing company. It wasn't anything that was, that you'd say, no wonder or something. But I don't think it had anything to do with, anything on the medical side.
Well,
I think it was
the interesting
a small manufacturing
aspect
company.
Is that this obviously is relatively very easily transmitted among some people.
Right.
Boom.
Because she was asymptomatic. So, she didn't have symptoms. B, the four people that are infected didn't go to China. And C, the contact was casual. It was at work at a meeting type of a thing. And it wasn't, that somebody, a family member where you were around whoever went to China and brought it back, had a lot of potential contact. This was kind of casual contact. So those are the ingredients. It was somebody that was asymptomatic. The contact was casual. It went from China to Germany, and then it's gone from Germany to Germany. And there are already four people in Germany that are infected. And there's 30 more that are being tested. And the fact that the one person in Germany infected three other coworkers, and there's 30 other coworkers there, raises the possibility that this is kind of a super spreader situation where the virus is transmissible enough that somebody gets sick from somebody that isn't showing symptoms. And then they start infecting multiple people and multiple contacts in a casual.
This is in Germany,
right?
Yeah, do we know if these are Germans or Asians who are involved?
I am virtually positive they're Germans because they mentioned the person that was there was Chinese. They didn't say anybody else was Chinese. And I'm pretty certain that these are Germans who were infected. And the woman who came and went was from China. So it's onward progression, and then it's onward expansion.
It
not only went from the part that stands out is the four people that are infected, never left Germany. And the one person that infected the other three, was in contact with somebody that was asymptomatic. So it's kind of silently spreading, and then all of a sudden you've got a bunch of people that are sick. And the reason this was interesting is this was with this one group, not far from where they are, and it's kind of like there's this big cluster. And now France has got, I think, four. So they're, and I think two of them are a cluster. So it's starting to take off in France also. And And that's what the concern is when it comes in and then it moves on and starts infecting more people at the new site. And then they start infecting other people. And that's how it kind of takes holes and takes hold. And that's what happens throughout China. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why all mm-hmm. these big cities are loaded. But okay, go on.
Hold on a minute. We'll take a break. We'll come right back with Dr. Henry Nyman right after this. Okay, welcome back. And if you take a look at the top of headlines, you'll find the latest stories from around the world. It is spreading. It's going to be something that I don't know what the peak date or time frame will be on this, as there usually is in an epidemic and a pandemic. Some people are saying next week in China will be the peak. I think that's a bit optimistic. It has legs. 5 million people left Wuhan City, remember, before the actual lockdown could be in place. That's a lot of people. It is moving, and it is spreading. We will see. We're watching. Stories are up there for you. Take a look. All right, Henry, go ahead.
Okay, well, on the break, I did double-check. The company is Webasto. It's a German car parts supplier, and I think it's a fairly large company. The employee that brought the virus actually was from Shanghai, not from Wuhan. And they've got this other Reuters story, as it is a male. I'm not sure if it's male or female. This is an earlier story. And company does have 11 locations in China, including Wuhan, but they've banned travel now. And he was in Starnberg, is where the cases are. And that's the company. That's where he lives. The headquarters are in Stockdorf. This is also in Bavaria and in Germany, and that's where the company's headquarters is. Right now, as of Tuesday, there were the employee plus three others. So there's four infected in Germany, and then I think the asymptomatic patient subsequently developed symptoms, and he's tested positive now too. So there's really one in Shanghai and four in Stockdorf, Bavaria. But there's 30 more employees at the facility that are being tested tomorrow, and this happened pretty quickly. I think the person with the virus, I think, was there on the 21st, so it's only been a week, and that person infected the one, and then that person probably infected three others. So there probably hasn't been all that much time for the others to develop symptoms. So the fact that they don't have symptoms doesn't mean much because they haven't been tested either, and so it's not clear how many, but it just seems that the cluster is fairly large, considering that the initial patient was asymptomatic. A lot of these infections are dose dependent, so you would think that if you got infected by somebody that was asymptomatic, you would have kind of a milder type of a course, and you wouldn't be that infectious. But the fact that it went from an asymptomatic to one person who's already infected three people and contacts have not been tested yet, it's not clear how many people got infected. And it's at a, you know, it's a parts supplier, and it's not, you know, a hospital where, you know, usually the hospitals are associated with people that are very sick and have a high viral load. And there's no reason for that to be in this group, but there's five people that are infected.
Now, that would raise a couple of interesting questions, though. If it's only been a week and we've got an established cluster, that suggests not only a very volatile infectious potential, but a rather short incubation, no?
Yeah, for the, right. Well, the 14 days, I think, is the outside. You know, they said 2 to 14 days. So, you know, most viral diseases, you know, infections only have an incubation of 2 to 3 days. I mean, that's what's common.
So this one can be a little longer then.
Uh-huh. It could be, but, you know, like I say, it's usually somewhat dose dependent, that if you get a lot of virus, you know, you might have incubation for just a couple days. And if you get a little virus, it might be 4 or 5 days. So this is relatively quickly to go from, you know, the one person that brought it to the person that was kind of the index case to three other people. So, you know, it sounded like the way they originally described it, that, the index case in Germany was the one that was had contact with the person who came there from Shanghai. And, I mean, he developed symptoms, and the employee from Shanghai was back in Shanghai already. So it sounded like it was a short trip, and he developed symptoms after the fact. You know, the contact was brief, and all of a sudden he had symptoms and tested positive, and then three coworkers had symptoms and tested positive, and the other coworkers haven't developed symptoms, but they haven't been tested either. So, and you know, these are just employees. I don't know what the status is of the, I think he had a wife and three children going on with his family, and what's going on with the families of the other three. The 30 that are talking about being tested are other at the other employees at the price supplier. So, in any event, this has the makings of a reasonable cluster in Germany from
people. Don't have a whole lot of time. Can you bring us a view of where we are with our cases here in the U.S.? Anything new?
Well, the cases now, the telebriefing today indicated there were no new ones. There are those five. I didn't finish up the sequence on that. The other three were released today, so all five sequences are now available, and two of those three had the same mutation that the first two had.
You say
had.
They were so released? Actually, they were diagnosed and then released?
No, I'm talking about the
sequences were released. Okay.
The sequences were released. Although I think that I had heard that the Washington case may be ready to be released from the hospital. So that didn't seem to be that serious in the sense that he was not hospitalized that long. But that is just kind of vague. Like I say, I was looking at sequences all day. But in any event, all four out of five have this mutation. All the ones in the cluster have it. And it's got all the markings of something that's emerging, because none of these cases really, other than the cluster in Shenzhen, had anything to do with each other. I mean, one was in Washington State, one was in Chicago, one was in Los Angeles, and one was in Phoenix. And these all kind of went bang, bang, bang. The only ones that happened at about the same time were the two in California, and those two, and that's the only one place where the virus was different. So there's only one in California that has it, not the other one. And so, you know, I wanted to get a little bit into the background as to why this looks like a bat virus, just real briefly, that it was actually because of the SARS outbreak. The SARS outbreak, you know, initially we're looking at the civet cats, because that was in the live markets where the people got infected. And the problem was, when they looked at civet cats in the wild, they couldn't find the virus. And that suggested that the animal reservoir was not civet cats or even exotic animals. And they ended up starting to look at bats, and horseshoe bats actually had coronaviruses that had similarity with the SARS virus. And that got researchers interested, so they go to bat caves and they have little pooper scoopers and kind of pick up the guano and do extractions to get viruses out. And what they found is the bats have a lot of coronaviruses, a lot of different types of coronaviruses. And at the time of SARS, there were two coronaviruses that were known. They were both produced mild, kind of cold-like symptoms. They were not serious diseases. And by having the sequences from the two earlier ones and having the sequence from SARS, they could identify regions that were kind of conserved and not changed between the three different groups of viruses, so they could go ahead and design a probe so they'd get kind of a universal type of a probe that they could pick up any coronavirus. And they discovered a couple that were also in humans, and turned out that they were similar to the two before SARS. So they were also respiratory disease that were found mostly in children. And some of the false positives have been identified while searching for this virus have used a broad type of a screening for coronaviruses, and children have been identified as positives, and then when they get tested further, they're negative for this particular virus. And after those discoveries, there was MERS, and MERS kind of set off the same type of interest in coronaviruses. It was quicker to identify that was a coronavirus. It was also a novel coronavirus. It was different than SARS, but it was related. And it was found in bats, and it was more closely related to bats in Europe than it was bats in Africa. And then they ended up finding it in camels. So it is in camels, and camels are really the source of the MERS, and that's why ME stands for Middle East. So it's Middle East Respiratory Syndrome. And that's why it's mostly located in the Middle East, because the camels are the animal reservoir there. But there are MERS-like viruses in bats in Europe and Africa and the Middle East. And so researchers are interested in coronaviruses, and they end up going and looking at bats. And the current virus is also related to bats. It's a little bit different. The closest match actually is a virus that's in a lab at Wuhan. That's what got a lot of people looking at the possibility that the virus that's causing all these problems is one that's kind of escaped from a lab or made into a bioweapon. The bioweapon story is the same story that I've heard for the last 20 years. You know, basically it's always a novel virus that escaped from a weapons lab, but the problem with that argument is the virus is always found in nature, and you know, it went for H5N1, it went for swine flu H1N1, it went for SARS.
You're seeing the actual genetics of these, and you recognize them as coming from nature.
I mean, you could tell this in literally 20 seconds. As soon as the sequence was published, you copy and paste. That takes, you know, about 2 seconds, and then you put it in to do a blast of GeneBank, and you hit blast, and that takes about 20 seconds. And then the default is they'll give you the top 100 matches, and right up at the top were these two bat viruses that it was closer to than any other coronavirus in the database. And I had mentioned before, there's like 41,000 coronaviruses in the database. And so it zoomed in and picked up these two sequences, and it turns out there's a third sequence that wasn't in the database that was released over the weekend. It's even closer. That one's about 96%. And so you can see what sequence is closest to. You can see that that sequence is in bats. These sequences were collected. I think they were in 2012 and 2015. The one that's even closer was collected back in 2013. So, you know, they've been around for a while, and they're definitely closest to a bat. And if people have looked at that and said that, well, there's this one region, this one protein, protein E for envelope, and I think they think that's the spike protein that gets the virus into the cell, but it's really a very tiny protein. It's only like 75 amino acids. It's 1% the size of the spike protein. It's not, spike protein is 100 times bigger. And, and they see this match and they kind of conflate things and think, well, the nCoV is a human virus and this is a bat virus. And why would a bat virus look like a human virus? But nCoV is a bat virus, and a bat virus looks like a bat virus because they're both from bats. And they have regions that are closer because they recombine. And so they might have a region in common, and they'll get 100% identity over a short region because that region has been maintained over time, and it's from the same source, so you get 100% match. So the fact that this protein E was the 75 amino acids, very, very small, is identical in this bat to what the virus is circulating isn't bat versus human, it's bat versus bat. And the changes that the virus might have over time wasn't in the original ones. The original ones, it had not been circulating in virus very long. And for instance, the mutation that I'm talking about, it's now in the human cases and in the Shenzhen cluster. The reason it was interesting is that there were like 20 sequences before that had been released, and it wasn't in any of those. So it was something that came up a little bit later, or at least its frequency came up a little bit later. So the initial sequences that came out, they were from the seafood market and, you know, the wet market, and the initial cases, they did not have this. And the first time I saw it was in the Shenzhen cluster. And then the more I knew about the cluster, the more interesting it got, because that cluster was like 5 or 6 people, and I included a 10-year-old that was asymptomatic and tested negative, but his lungs were damaged from the virus. So this was a dangerous virus. And then when it started showing up in the first case in the U.S., I started thinking that this might be a virus that's emerging, because there was nothing in common with the guy in Washington State in Shenzhen. And then it's now in 4 out of 5 human ones. So I think it is an emerging virus. It is emerging because it transmits more easily. And I think you'll be hearing more about this particular lineage in the not too distant future.
Okay. Thank you, Henry, very much. Talk to you tomorrow. We'll keep posting stories as we get them. They're all up there at rents.com right now. All right. Have a good night, Henry. Thanks.
Okay. Good night. See you tomorrow. Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. That's it. We're watching. Lots going on in this impeachment story. We have the latest up there for you, too. At least we think the most relevant stories to consider. And we'll see. If they begin to allow witnesses, and I don't see how they're going to wiggle out of this one. They try. The public demands it. 75%. It's going to get to be pretty wild. Okay. See what happens. Talk to you tomorrow.